This is the first time a sitting U.S. president has entered North Korea.
Trump and Kim meet at the DMZ. It's Monday, July 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Also stop by our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Coming up, we delve into the surprise meeting in Korea, diminishing demand for rhino horns. China gets avocados from Kenya. Art for the blind, fast radio bursts. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Donald Trump has become the first sitting U.S. president to visit North Korea, stepping across the border during a meeting at the demilitarized zone with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. After shaking hands with Kim at the Panmunjom border village, Trump walked across the military demarcation line separating the two Koreas. Kim and Trump then crossed back over the border into South Korea. Trump on Saturday had said the meeting would only last 2 minutes. However, Trump's private talks with Kim lasted about 50 minutes, turning it into an impromptu summit, as we hear more from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un met at the Panmunjom border village in the militarized zone that separates the two Koreas. Trump had said that this meeting was going to last 2 minutes. However, after meeting and Donald Trump stepped into North Korea, Kim Jong-un came over to the North Korean side. The two leaders went inside and held talks for about 50 minutes. This basically turned into an impromptu summit. When the two leaders emerged, they came out announcing, Trump was announcing at least, that working-level talks had resumed and that the two sides had agreed to form teams, Donald Trump said, in order to, quote, work on issues. He said they'll be meeting in the next few weeks to see if they can work something out. And using sort of Trumpian language, he said, we'll see what happens. This is the first time a sitting U.S. president has entered North Korea. Donald Trump, after shaking hands with Kim Jong-un, stepped over the concrete barrier which forms the military demarcation line that separates North and South Korea. That is a historic moment. There's no two ways about it. Previous U.S. presidents have visited North Korea after they left office. Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton very famously visited North Korea. But this is the first time a sitting U.S. president has done so. It will always live in history this day because of that reason, I guess.
And I understand that there's a lot coming from the South Korean president. He's really, you know, applauding this effort.
Sure. Well, this is his main policy priority, is engagement with North Korea. And I can say in a less analytical mode even, this is a big priority for many Koreans here in South Korea where I'm at. They are undeterred by things like arguments here in the U.S., such as this will give Kim Jong-un legitimacy, that you're normalizing relations with a brutal dictator. I mean, there are people who are concerned about that, but a good many people in South Korea support outreach to North Korea, even as unsavory as it might be. This is a situation where you have two countries that are divided. Many people here do not want them to remain divided. However, you know, how things move forward from here, given the vast disagreements between those involved in these talks, is unclear.
Since this is unprecedented for a U.S. president, were the South Koreans stopping what they were doing? Were they glued to televisions? Was this as significant to them as it has been to us over here in the news reporting world?
Absolutely. You know, this is a major, major story in South Korea. For weeks, there has been speculation about whether Trump would visit the DMZ, and if he's there, would he meet Kim Jong-un? I mean, literally, this has been a top news story for weeks and weeks. The fact that it happened and the fact that talks seem to be back on, it continues to be a news story here. And I really must stress that there is a feeling among Koreans, at least in Seoul that I'm talking to, that they're very happy that these talks are back on track. You know, if things go wrong between Trump and Kim Jong-un, these people are the most affected. I mean, the people in Seoul are within long-range artillery distance of North Korea's artillery. So this is a very real situation for them. They want to see the situation get less tense, not more tense.
VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo speaking with Tommy McNeil. Stay with VOA Asia as we further explore this third meeting between Kim and Trump in just a moment. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you go and visit voanews.com. Trump meets Kim at DMZ, crosses into North Korea. Hong Kong braces for more protests on handover anniversary. Ship carrying waste returns to Canada from Philippines. Montagnard's deportation sparks fears about safety. United States urges end to mobile data blackout in two Myanmar states. You'll find expanded coverage on these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Now that Donald Trump has become the first U.S. president to enter North Korea while in office, the question of what is next must be asked. That's what VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked of Evans Revere, former U.S. State Department official dealing with East Asian and Pacific affairs. Melman began his conversation by asking whether President Trump's style of diplomacy through personal relationship could actually work.
It remains to be seen how this is going to turn out. I am a skeptic. Many years of dealing with the North Koreans and a pretty good sense of what their bottom line has been and continues to be makes me deeply skeptical that this process is going to end up with a success.
Why wouldn't a new approach work? Why couldn't a new approach work as one man who understands another man?
I am all in favor of new and different and alternate approaches, and during the course of many years working on these issues, tried just about, or recommended just about every approach that is imaginable, including this one. The problem that we have here is that regardless of the approach, the North Korean bottom line has not changed. And we saw that based on what we observed in Singapore and, more importantly, what we observed in Hanoi. The North Korean leader, the North Korean system, they are determined to hold on to the core components of their nuclear weapons program at virtually any cost.
The word denuclearization was, I don't believe, brought up by Donald Trump or Kim Jong-un in the remarks they made after their meeting. What is wrong with not doing it the other way, by releasing or reducing some of the actions that have been taken against them economically? And why not let them be a nuclear power?
Well, first of all, one of the key sources of leverage for the United States in these negotiations are economic sanctions and the pressure that is on North Korea. In the past, in previous administrations, the United States tried the easing of sanctions, and that did not lead to denuclearization. It led to quite the opposite. So we learned some very hard lessons back in the day, both in the Clinton administration and the Bush administration. We learned some very tough lessons from the North Koreans about their determination to hold on to their nuclear capacity, regardless of the U.S. approach. We held out the prospect of a presidential visit in the Clinton administration, and President Clinton personally rejected that because he was not convinced, with good reason, that the North Koreans were prepared to conclude a deal with him. President Trump has obviously reached a different conclusion, hence his three summits and his stepping across the border into North Korea. But with respect to your other point, why not let them be and let them continue on the path that they're on? Keep in mind that the North Koreans have actually threatened to use nuclear weapons against the United States. They are developing the capabilities to carry out that threat. This is a country that has shown certain capacities and capabilities that are pretty barbaric over the years. And beyond that, North Korea is not accepted by the international community as a nuclear weapon state, unlike the United States and China, et cetera. And to allow North Korea to have violated its international obligations by developing a nuclear weapons program, it would further do damage to the international nonproliferation regime.
Do you expect anything positive to happen coming out of what happened near the DMZ with President Trump walking in to North Korea?
I'm absolutely convinced that the North Koreans are determined to hold on to their nuclear weapons, but that doesn't mean that they will not sit down and talk and make proposals and counter-proposals to the United States. And I think the one thing that is most likely to come out of this encounter on the DMZ is the resumption of high-level, working-level talks between American representatives and North Korean representatives. So I think what you saw in Panmunjom a few hours ago was a masterful piece of political theater made for television drama, some feel-good made for television moments. But substantively, I would argue that we are no better off than we were before that meeting, because on the substantive side, the North Koreans have not changed their position. And I hope to heaven that the United States has not changed its position of a determined pursuit of the denuclearization of North Korea.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman with former U.S. State Department official and Asia-Pacific expert Evans Revere. Happening now in Asia, more than 50,000 people rallied in support of the Hong Kong police Sunday as the semi-autonomous territory braced for another day of protests on the anniversary of the former British colony's return to China. Police estimated the turnout at 53,000. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we both start out a brand new week at VOA Asia. Zimbabwe says its practice of dehorning rhinos to deter poaching is paying off. Rhino horns are popular for traditional medicines across Asia. Wildlife officials say poaching is slowing, and the number of rhinos is increasing thanks to the program. Columbus Mavunga reports from Matobo National Park, about an hour's drive from the Bulawayo, Zimbabwe's second biggest city.
Zimbabwe's Matopo National Park is home to both endangered black rhinos and threatened southern white rhinos. They were moved to this site about 500 kilometers southwest of Harare to protect them from rampant poaching. Wildlife conservation groups say joint efforts by non-profit groups and the government of Zimbabwe to fight rhino poaching are working. They remove the rhino's horns, which are highly valued in the Asian black market for alleged healing properties and backed by science.
The dehorning, of course, removes the incentive to poachers and increases the risk for a low reward. And in small populations, we feel that it is the way to go.
After 3 hours searching with the Zimbabwe Parks Ranger, Marvelous Neweyembwa, we find rhinos. Some run away, but some don't. Another strategy to protect the rhinos, say rangers, is to scatter them so that poachers do not find them in one place.
I'm happy to report over the few years, the number of poachers in Zimbabwe and the Kaza region has drastically reduced. We have good conservation programs to make sure that we look after our wild animals.
Wildlife authorities provide rangers in Zimbabwe national parks with camping equipment and field work equipment like cameras and GPS services. Still, efforts to stop poaching is a major challenge.
Protection of rhinos is a very complicated affair, as you're probably aware, and there are a number of strategies which are in place. We had the big poaching epidemic in 2003-2004. And at that point, we stepped up our assistance to parks insofar as assisting with implants in horns and other patrol support to try and cut down on the loss of rhinos in the national park.
The current rhino population is kept secret so that poaching groups do not exploit it and wildlife conservationists can continue to make progress. Ultimately, officials say the goal is to ensure future generations see rhinos in national parks, not in zoos. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Matobo National Park, Zimbabwe.
Coming up, China looks to East Africa for avocados. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news from VOA Asia, a ship carrying 69 containers of waste mislabeled as plastic recyclables returned to Canada Saturday from the Philippines, closing a chapter on a dispute that started in 2013 and sparked a diplomatic furor between Ottawa and Manila. Open your daily news chapter with a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, for decades, Kenya has exported avocados mainly to Europe and America. In April, Kenya signed a trade agreement with China that will see Kenyan avocados exported to the Asian country. Kenyan avocado farmers plan to increase production in hopes of tapping the huge Chinese market, although as Rail Ambur reports, there is a requirement that they'll have to meet.
Alexander Mushiri tends to the 30 avocado trees he planted 7 years ago on his farm in Kiharu, Murang'a County. In previous years, most of his avocados were sold locally. Then in April, Kenya signed a deal to export avocados to China, making Kenya the only African nation to sell the fruit to the huge Chinese consumer market. With that in mind, Mushiri says he will scale up production by planting more trees.
If we plant more avocados, that means there will be a market for them. Back then, brokers would come, pick the larger fruits and leave the smaller ones on the farms with no one to sell to, hence lots of wastage.
About 2 kilometers away from Mushiri's farm, Beatrice Muguri inspects her 300 avocado trees. Previously, she grew coffee on her 8-acre farm but switched to avocados a few years ago.
My avocados are about 3 years old. These are the first fruits. Potential buyers have come to my farm several times to check the avocados. They will be coming back to pick the harvest. They picked samples of the fruit.
The potential buyers Mugura is talking about are private exporting companies. Kenya's Ministry of Trade says that the Chinese market will take in over 40% of Kenya's avocado crop, putting Kenya in the top rank of avocado exporters. There's one catch, says trade official Peter Munya.
Usually, if you want to export something outside, there is what is called SPS, sanitary and phytosanitary standard that you have to meet. And technical teams come to assess. When they came to assess the situation of avocado, there was found to have some flies that made it very difficult for us to export raw avocado. And a stopgap decision was made to have frozen avocados and be exported.
A prerequisite for exporting the deal is that farmers or traders are required to freeze the fruits to negative 30 degrees Celsius after peeling off the skin. The fruits are supposed to be chilled further to negative 18 degrees while in transit. The Ministry of Trade plans to support the Kenya National Trading Corporation to establish cold storage facilities for the small farmers.
We are also looking at building capacity for Kenya National Trading Corporation to support small-scale farmers to aggregate. And that already in the budget, we have some resources to support KNTC, improve its warehouses, and then export.
VOA spoke to private exporters, and some are planning to make investments in cold storage to meet the Chinese export requirements. However, small-scale farmers worry that the stringent requirements will prevent many potential farmers from directly exporting the produce. Those farmers are relying on cooperative societies to find markets that can buy their produce fresh from the farm. Rael Umbur for VOA News, Murang'a, Kenya.
Campus News from VOA Asia. Mexican Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard says his nation wants to deepen economic ties with China by increasing its exports and attracting more investment from the Asian country. Ebrard says he'll be giving priority to expanding business ties during his visit to Beijing this week. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, museums across the United States are striving to be more accessible to everyone. That includes touchable versions of photographs and paintings for people who may not be able to see them. At a recent expo by the American Alliance of Museums in New Orleans, new technology was used to help the visually impaired see art and pictures. VOA's Deborah Block tells us more.
This is how you feel art. Here, these exhibitions show different ways to help the impaired enjoy the works on display by creating images in order to produce 3D art.
One of our big focuses now is on accessibility as part of our focus on diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And sometimes being accessible means translating things into different sensory realms. So can you make something visible for people who don't have, who have hearing impairments? Can you make something touchable for people who have visual impairments?
Members of the National Federation of the Blind tried out the three-dimensional images that feature raised subjects and varying textures.
Very often when we go to museums, we see glass enclosures with nothing for us. There's no way for us to experience what our sighted counterparts experience. And this kind of is an equalizer for us.
The technology was developed by 3D PhotoWorks.
We've developed a technology that converts any two-dimensional image, any painting, drawing, collage, photograph, satellite view, to a three-dimensional tactile image.
He says people with sight enjoy the images too.
From a museum's position, it's growing what they call the dwell times for both the blind and the sighted. The sighted are spending more time learning about a visual than they would if it were just a photograph.
The displays include a war scene, musical art painting, and a historical painting, as well as a campus map.
This model, I think, is more reflective of even the more functionality of this tool, is this technology, as opposed to just art rendering, because this actually has a functional use. So this one right here, I can read in Braille and see that it has a specific meaning, that this is a street. So the street has this texture, and this button also is audio representation of it as well.
For the visually impaired, the technology helps them to be part of something they could not see before.
This evolving technology really is about inclusion. It really is about making us a part of the world in which we live.
Deborah Block, VOA News.
While VOA Asia may seem to go by quickly each day, VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to tell us about far away fast radio bursts.
This is Science in a Minute.
For the first time ever, astronomers detected and then pinpointed the origination of a single fast radio burst, or FRB. A fast radio burst is just that, a very powerful and quick, lasting only a couple of milliseconds, blast of radio waves that are transmitted from far across the universe. Astronomers at the Australian Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder Radio Telescope in Western Australia detected the radio burst, known as FRB 180924, in September 2018. They determined that it originated in a Milky Way-sized galaxy located within the Gru constellation, about 3.6 billion light-years away. To learn more about the galactic source of the FRB, the astronomers used the European South Observatory's 8-meter Very Large Telescope, the 10-meter Keck Telescope, and the 8-meter Gemini South Telescope to image and measure distance. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll find us on the radio throughout Asia. You can hear us on U Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25, at Hatay University in Thailand. Many of you, in fact, listen to our program on U Radio today. We thank you very much for tuning in. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.